You are listening to the Pursuit of Manliness podcast, where we are vigorously equipping men to pursue biblical manliness. For more information about the Pursuit of Manliness or find out about the herd, make sure you visit thepursuitofmanliness.com. Well, men, we are once again out in the garage. It's a Friday. This is what we do. We're walking through scripture left to right. We've been doing this for some time now. Basically chunks at a time, not necessarily chapters at a time, but chunks at a time, trying to just, you know, gain some understanding, but also some application of the text. We're in Genesis chapter 43 today. Last week it was Genesis 42, where Joseph's brothers were standing around looking at each other, and their dad said, "Hey, why don't you do something about this?" So they go to Egypt to get food, not realizing the guy that they're standing before and bowing down before is Joseph, the one they thought they got rid of. Well, they are now solely depending on him for their sustenance. So Genesis chapter 43, I'll start with this, verse 1. "Now the famine was severe in the land, and when they had eaten the grain that they brought from Egypt, their father said to them, 'Go again and buy us a little food.' But Judah said to him, 'The man solemnly warned us, saying, "You shall not see my face unless your brother is with you. If you will send our brother with us," we're talking about Benjamin here, "if you'll send Benjamin with us, then we will go down and buy food. But if you will not send him, we will not go down. For the man said to us, "You shall not see my face unless your brother is with you." Israel said, "Why did you treat me so badly and tell the man that you had another brother?" They replied, "The man questioned us carefully about ourselves and our kindred, saying, 'Is your father still alive? Do you have another brother?' What we told him was an answer to these questions. Could we in any way know that he would say, 'Bring your brother down'?" Judah said to Israel, his father, "Send the boy with me, and we will arise and go that we may live and not die, both we and you and also our little ones. I will be a pledge of his safety. From my hand you shall require him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, then let me bear the blame forever." Let's just stop right there. I would encourage you to read this entire chapter, but I'm not going to read a whole lot more than what I just did right there. If you go to Genesis 42, and in my Bible it's right above this 43, what I just read. Genesis 42, we'll go to verse 37. "Then Reuben said to his father, 'Kill my two sons if I do not bring him back to you.'" We're talking about bringing Benjamin with us to Egypt. And Jacob said, "Nope, that's not going to happen." Reuben said, "Kill my two sons." The two sons are like, "Could we have a word with you real quick? Kill my two sons if I do not bring him back to you. Put him in my hands, and I will bring him back to you." Jacob said, "No, we're not going to do that." I'm paraphrasing, obviously. Jacob said, "No, we're not going to do that." Here, Judah stands up and says, "Okay, here's what we need to do." Now, let's just paint the picture here. Many years earlier, these brothers, because of their jealousy of Joseph, sold him in slavery. Let's go back even further. Because Laban decided to manipulate the marriage situation, he put Leah with Jacob instead of Rachel. So now Jacob marries two women, and with those two women come two maidservants. So he has essentially four wives. He has kids with all four wives. However, his favorite wife, which is so odd to say, but his favorite wife, Rachel, it took her a long time to bear children. Eventually, she's able to bear children, and she has Joseph. Jacob makes no bones about it. "That's my favorite kid." That is never going to work out ever. You shouldn't have favorites in anything for that matter, you know. But here's where he's at. He's picked favorites, and that has worked out terribly for him. Obviously, he's not learned his lesson because he's still showing immense favoritism towards Benjamin. Rachel has died. This is all he has left from that relationship is Benjamin, and he's protecting him at absolutely all cost. Well, the brothers, they're messy. They're complicated. And if you get to the end of Genesis, you're going to see where Jacob starts doling out the blessings and the curses in a lot of ways. It's the consequences of their personalities. This is a complete and utter dumpster fire. And yet, God still uses this family, all these scenarios for his glory. Little did they know that when they sold Joseph into slavery, he would end up in a house of a man named Potiphar, rise to the top, get thrown back into jail. He's in the same jail where the king's prisoners are going to go. And eventually, because of the cupbearer and the baker, the cupbearer comes back 2 years later, forgets him. Eventually, Joseph's going to be able to interpret a dream because God has really orchestrated all these events. And now Joseph is the guy that doles out the food. He says whether you can have it or not. When they come to see Joseph, he talks very harshly to them because he knows who they are. And he decides, we're going to have some fun. And as a younger brother, I imagine there's times where he's like, I was sick of being, you know, bullied around by you guys. And don't forget, they did sell him to slavery. First, they put him in a pit, then pulled him out. And clearly from the text, we can see that Joseph was begging them not to do this. That would be a terrifying moment. We can't even fathom this. And lo and behold, here they are, depending on their brother to be the one to save them. And they don't know it. They don't realize that it's him. And don't forget, in the midst of all this, the first time they went there, they were in jail for a few days, got brought out, and old Simeon's still sitting there. We're not worried about Simeon. We're worried about Benjamin. That's who we're worried about. And so this is a mess. And you'll notice in the text that Jacob's name is used as Israel. He had a wrestling match with God, if you remember that, and he prevailed. An all-night-long wrestling match. I've said before, where we're from, wrestling's a big deal. I didn't wrestle. But I'll tell you what, the rounds do not go 12 hours. I know that. And so I can't imagine if you wrestled all night long how worn out you would be, and you would think you would never forget that. In that moment, God changed his name from Jacob to Israel. You are now going to start living and acting like a nation. But he doesn't do that either, does he? And what happens here is, you'll see it throughout the text, there will be a name change every once in a while. What is that about? Well, when he acts like Jacob, we're going to call him Jacob. When he acts like Israel, we're going to call him Israel. And there's these different scenarios that are used in the situation. And here, we see his name being used as Israel. He's starting to act like a nation in this moment. He kind of goes back and forth. It's kind of an image of our Christian life, isn't it? There's moments where you live and you are reflective of a redeemed individual. There's times where I think, I'll tell you what, this took. The old Jarrett would not have lived, talked, or acted that way. Nope. The old is gone, the new has come. And then there's times you think, good night, Olivia. Am I ever going to figure this thing out? Am I ever going to get past these obstacles? Am I ever going to learn this? Or, man, I'm so tired of repenting of these same things. Jacob is, in many ways, a snapshot of our life. And here, Judah says, here's the deal. Send the boy with me. If it doesn't work out, you can blame me. Now, we only get print, okay? You only get what is written here. And again, I jump up. Again, it's on the same column of my Bible, same side. And when I say that, you guys watch on YouTube, I'll show you what I'm talking about. There's where I'm looking at here, right down here. There's where Judah starts to talk. I know there's a considerable time difference there. However, doesn't it seem that Reuben, what he shares, has a little more heat behind it? Doesn't it appear what Reuben says has a lot more skin in the game? I'll go back to that. Kill my two sons if I don't bring them back to you. If I don't bring Benjamin back to you, and I don't sit him right in front of you, you can kill my two sons. Jacob said, no, we're not going to do that. Now, maybe Jacob's not hungry enough. Maybe Jacob still thinks that God's going to, have a raven, like he did with Elijah. He's going to bring some delivery service by. Maybe he thinks this famine, there's going to be relief, and eventually rain's going to come, and we're going to get back to normal. Maybe he's just not there yet, where as aggressive as this offer is, Jacob's just, he's not ready for it. I don't know. Don't forget, Reuben is the one that had sex with Jacob's concubine here. Kind's up on his couch. And so Jacob and him, they never quite worked this thing out, do they? And again, you could jump to the end of the book and you could see that there's no reconciliation there. It just doesn't happen. And so maybe that's what it is. And Reuben, you know, would love to get back in his good graces, but that's not going to happen. Judah, again, here he is. I believe Judah's son number four. Could be wrong on that, but I think he's son number four. So he's down. He's down a little bit here. Judah said to his father, send the boy with me, and we will rise and go that we may live and not die, both we, you, and our little ones. I will be a pledge of his safety. For my hand you shall require him. Now maybe Judah's more of an outdoorsman. Maybe he's more of a handy guy. Maybe, you know, there's just certain people that when you're around them, you just feel like it's going to be okay. There's just certain people that you say, when I'm with them, on a trip with them, hiking, camping, church, men's ministry, boardroom, whatever, if they're in the room, we're going to be okay. Maybe Judah's one of those guys. I don't know. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, like physically set him, no, I don't think he's saying that, then let me bear the blame forever. If we had not delayed, we would now have returned twice. He said we could have went to the store twice and got our food. And don't forget, Simeon is still sitting in jail. We just keep him there? We're just not going to worry about Simeon? The father said to them, if it must be so, then do this. And so then he puts a grocery list together. Jacob said, well, let's really wow the guy. Let's overwhelm him with our goodness. Now, how he gets all this stuff together, he's going to put all these things together. He's going to put balm and honey, gum, myrrh, pistachio nuts. Everybody loves those. Almonds, take double the money. And Jacob's a blessed man, don't forget. He's not short on the cash. Carry it with you. Carry back extra money with you. I want to make sure we appease whatever the requirement is of this individual, because I want Benjamin back. You guys, not so concerned about. Make sure you bring him back. And so they go on, and they're going to get ready to do that. And eventually, Joseph's going to get to see Benjamin, and he gives him, I believe it's double portions, and five times as much as theirs. And they drank and were merry with him. Had a little party, had a little dinner. They had to sit at different tables because Egyptians wouldn't eat with them. But however, I don't want to miss this. There's two things. Let's start with this. The Jacob and Israel deal. How often do I wander back into the old self? I was texting a friend of mine about this the other night. I think sometimes in the Christian life, the fact that, you know, there isn't an actual name change, or we don't have a uniform, or we don't have like a name badge we wear, or a certain vest, or, you know, like different groups, different religions, different things have like a thing, right? They have a thing. We don't. We wear t-shirts and shorts and caps and sunglasses, and, you know, we can do whatever. I think sometimes we're almost cursed because it's too casual. There isn't an official name change. I've seen this with doing weddings. Like when that girl signs her name with that guy's last name, it means something. But I've also been in a situation where I was there with the marriage license and I had the husband and the wife there. And I said, okay, you just sign your names and this is what you can do. And she didn't take his last name. That was uncomfortable. And obviously they had not discussed this. She, for whatever reason, was going to hang on to the old self. Couldn't let it go. Now, she wasn't a famous actress. She wasn't a recording artist or anything that would throw off like the branding. No, she was just a person that didn't want to take his last name. I would say that marriage is in for an uphill battle in a lot of different ways. And I think it's the fact that you don't want to identify with that new self. We don't have name changes in the Christian walk. Again, we don't have like a certain necklace we wear or a certain ring. Like, oh, they're wearing the ring. They must be. No, we don't have that. And I think sometimes that hurts us because we think we can go incognito and we can be like super seeker mission Christian person and never actually open our mouth up or do anything kind for other people or never actually pray out loud or worship out loud, or we can do that and we can convince ourselves that we're good, and what you're doing is you're living like the old self. You're living like the old self. The old self wouldn't worship. The old self wouldn't pray. The old self wouldn't serve. The old self wouldn't tithe. Don't be the old self. But here's the second thing. You guys have heard me talk about this a number of times, and I think it's important to make sure we note it before we move on to next week's. And that is Judah having that line in the sand moment. And we talk about line in the sand from time to time here on this podcast because I think it's important to draw that line in the sand. Every once in a while, you need to draw a line in the sand and say, we're not going to live like that anymore. Are we Christians or not? Are we saved or are we not? Is our hope in the heavens, in eternity, living with Jesus forever or not? It's like what Elijah said. Don't go limping between two different opinions. And everyone said nothing. Judah, I believe, while he doesn't say, hey, you can kill my kids, Judas says it with conviction and authority. I don't have any question about that. I don't think he yells. I don't think he slams the table. I don't think he gets up and walks out for dramatic effect. No, I think Judah looks him right in the eyeball and says, here's the deal. If this thing fails, you can blame me. But I am telling you, I'm going to Egypt. I'm going to get some food. And I'm going to bring this kid back to you. I'm going to set him, literally set him right in front of you. Now you quit messing around and give him permission to leave. We could have already went two times. I don't think he goes, you know, I can handle it. If you let me go, I think I can do it. You know, I'm really good with people. I have people skills. And so I think we will create kind of a persuasive argument when we get there. And oh, by the way, pick up your other brother while you're there. I don't think he does it. I know he doesn't get up the next day and say, you know, Pops, that was a little dramatic last night. Every time we have lamb for dinner, I just get real fired up and I just, you know, it's not myself. No, nope. It is an unwavering conviction and focus. We are going to do this and we are going to live. We're going to live. We're not going to exist. We're not going to barely hang on. We're not going to try to get through this. We are going to live. And some of you need to start living. You don't need permission to live. You don't need permission to start doing the things you know you should do. You don't need permission to get into this book and do what it says. It gives you more than enough instruction on how to live. Live with courage, live with boldness, live with hope. But for crying out loud, just live. Go live. A bunch of wimpy Christians walking around. I hope they don't say anything to me. I hope they don't look at me. Man, I get it. I like to be left alone as well. But given the opportunity, live. God woke you up today. Live. Live to the full. Stop giving yourself in all these areas and ways and hoping I can appease this and hoping I can appease that. I walked into the post office today and I had to bring some packages and a newer person was there. And I said, you new here? We had a brief conversation. It was so awkward, so uncomfortable. And I walk out and I told myself, why do you do that? Why do you do that? You try to be something to someone else to make them happy, appease them. Just live. You have the hope of Jesus Christ living inside you. That's more than enough. I don't need to try to turn on the charm. I know it's hard to believe. I don't need to turn on the charm. I don't need to try to lighten the mood. I don't need to try to make someone feel more. I don't need to do that. And you don't need to do it either. Just live. What Judah does here is a risky move. He says, this will be my legacy. If it fails, this is my legacy. When's the last time you took a legacy-changing risk and said, I'm drawing a line in the sand? I don't know what it looks like for you. There's two components to this text today. Don't live like your old self. Live like the new self. But at the end of the day, just live. Take some risk. Draw some line in the sand and say, hey, we're going. I guarantee you this. I guarantee you this. We got a brother sitting in jail. We got one in Egypt and we got one tagging along. We got 10 guys. I guarantee 9 of them, especially Benjamin, is going to look at Judah a little bit different. Some of them are going to look at him in a cynical way. Look at him, he really thinks he's something. Who cares? I guarantee Benjamin ain't going to let him out of his sight. This guy just put his neck on the line for me. I'm rolling with him. I'm grabbing onto his robe. I'm standing side by side by him. When we're doling out food, I call, sit to his right. I'm not leaving this guy because I don't know where I'm going. I don't know if I get stuck in jail. But this guy just said, hey, listen, man, I'll protect you. You go with me. I guarantee there's some brothers in there that are going to look at him in a different light and say, I don't know what happened to Judah. He's different. And I got to believe the same thing will happen to you. Stop exerting yourself in the areas that are absolutely fruitless and just live. Stop being the old self. Just live. Take some risk. Draw lines in the sand. Today, as you listen to this or watch this, whatever day it is for you, it doesn't matter. Would you stop for a moment? And I'm going to do the same here in just a second. And just say, Lord, what area of my life do I need to draw a line in the sand and say, that's over, now we move forward? Because I don't think a line in the sand moment is a one-time deal. It might be a daily deal. I think some lines in the sand are a lot bigger than others. Nevertheless, when you do it, it changes your legacy and it tells the people around you, oh, we're going to live. Amen? I'll talk to you guys in a little bit. Once again, thank you for listening to the Pursuit of Manliness podcast. If you would, make sure you visit iTunes and leave a 5-star review. Again, for more information or find out more information about The Herd, visit thepursuitofmanliness.com.